Want to know what it's like to be a Red Sox broadcaster? We've got the guy. You know him as TC. Of course, that's Tom Caron from NESN. We are coming to you from the Globies, Boston Globe's awards that celebrate the dynamic New England sports scene. I'm Steve Safran, producer of Season Ticket, filling in for Chris Gasper. I'm outside the House of Blues. Inside, TC is handing out the awards. It's Wednesday, December 6th, and this is Season Ticket.
Ladies and gentlemen, how's everybody doing tonight out there? Please give Boston loud for our host this evening. For the past 20 years, he's been fixtured on NESN's Red Sox and Bruins coverage, and for six straight years, he's been rated New England's favorite TV personality. Please welcome Tom Caron.
Everybody, how y'all doing tonight?
Thank you so much for joining us on Season Ticket.
Thanks, Steve.
So we're in the off season right now. They're heading to the winter meetings for the Red Sox. What do they need to do?
Well, they need to get a bat. I think that's without question the number one priority. I think it was at the end of the season. I think it was when David Ortiz retired and they didn't replace him then. So a year later, we're kind of looking at the same thing. The belief that Hanley Ramirez would be able to step in and kind of fill that power void obviously didn't come together. And in an era where home runs are being hit at record rates, more home runs hit in Major League Baseball than any other season last year, and the Red Sox were last in the American League. Playing in a ballpark like Fenway Park, you got to hit some home runs. They need to go find a guy to do that.
A lot of talk was around Giancarlo Stanton from Miami. That didn't pan out. Was that ever going to happen? Was that a good idea?
Well, it could have been a good idea if things lined up correctly, if they could have gotten him without giving up a lot of talent and without having to take all the salary, which is to say it was never going to happen because the Marlins aren't going to do that, right? They're either going to get a good haul in return as far as prospects go, or they're going to make someone eat the entire $300 million remaining on that card. He's over $31 million a year for the last 7 years. Plus, he can opt out after three, so you don't even have the guarantee that he would be around. So I love the idea of Stanton in the lineup. I think we've gone past that era of 7 year contracts weighing
right.
A team down. The Yankees just finally got out of those contracts. I don't think you want to bury yourself under one.
And it seems like that was anti-Red Sox strategy for the longest time. And then all of a sudden they were buying these giant contracts that weren't working out.
Right. And, you know, you can still make the argument that David Price contract is big if he decides not to opt out, if he's got elbow problems going forward. And he was able to pitch out of it last year and he looked good in the playoffs. So if he can come back and be healthy, then that contract's going to be okay. But if you've got a guy battling elbow injuries, maybe missing significant parts of seasons, that's a big albatross.
With Stanton out of the picture, who are the attractive free agents or possible trade prospects out there?
I'm a big J.D. Martinez fan. Went from Detroit to Arizona, had a great year. The home run power kind of came up out of nowhere. It's going to be a matter of how much. He's going to be looking for 5 years and a lot of money. I like Carlos Santana. Maybe over Eric Hosmer, those would be a couple of first base options that would allow you to keep Hanley Ramirez as primarily a DH. Interesting thing on Hanley, too, is he's got the opportunity to vest one more year on his deal. This is the fourth year of a four-year deal, but it's like 470-some-odd at-bats. If he gets that this year, there's another $22 million year that tacks on. So they're going to be really careful. If he's not doing well, they're not going to give him the at-bats.
Of course, if they're going to trade, they're going to have to give up someone. Who is sacred? Who do we have to think about letting go?
It's a great question. And I'm going to add another element to that, because the guys who are sacred, I think, are Mookie Betts and Andrew Benintendi and Rafael Devers. Youngest out of the three of them. Those are the guys you build around. Xander Bogaerts is right there as well. The problem you're going to have, or specifically Dave Dombrowski, who I just talked to, the problem he's going to have.
He's having a great time here.
Yep. Because you can't. Well, you can, but it's going to be really difficult to extend all of their contracts. You can't give everybody $400 million. So he's going to have to decide who those untouchable guys are. That's a long way to get back to the guy who I haven't mentioned is Jackie Bradley Jr. And I think everybody throws his name into it. He's a little bit older than the other guys. His offense averages out to a good number, but you see those incredibly hot months and incredibly cold valleys that he goes through. I love his defense. I love to watch him play. But when we were hearing a lot of talk about Jose Abreu from the Chicago White Sox, Jackie Bradley Jr.'s name seemed to be the first name that comes up. So I think if they go that route, I think Bradley is a guy who gets thrown into those conversations a lot. I just think there's enough talent on the free agent market that you don't have to trade to get it.
Are you comfortable with where the Red Sox are on pitching, or were you part of the Shohei Ohtani Japanese Babe Ruth bandwagon.
I just wanted to see Ohtani hit 40 home runs and win 20 games, you know, win the MVP and the Cy Young and the Silver Slugger. I've talked to a lot of people who've seen him in Japan, and they say he really can be a plus pitcher and a plus hitter in the major leagues. Would have been fun to have him. I was here for the Daisuke saga, and I know we all remember Daisuke as kind of the guy who drove us nuts with four-hour games and 150 pitches after three innings. Yeah. At one point in his last year here, I don't remember which year it was, but at one point we were keeping the stat of what batters were against him with the bases loaded, and they were like 0 for 18. Like, he would load the bases twice a game and not give up a run, but then later give up four runs, you know, doing something else. So, I do remember that when they got him that fall of 07, I guess it was, electric. There were, you know, throngs of Japanese media covering his every move. And Ohtani, I think, is going to have even more of that. And I was really looking forward to what that would be if it came to Boston. So I think their pitching's good enough. Back to your question. They get Stephen Wright back, the knuckleballer, and I think he'll help. You hope that the little surgery they did on Eduardo Rodriguez will stabilize him, because I think he's still young enough that he could be a terrific pitcher before it's all said and done. And you need Porcello to come back. Maybe not be a Cy Young winner again, but be somewhere in between what he was in 16 and what he was in 17.
I want to ask you a little bit about your role on the broadcast. People are, they feel like you're part of the family, that they got to see you before the game. They go out on Yawkey Way, on Fenway. There's the pregame that's happening out there. They're seeing you in the studio afterwards. What's your prep like before each game? What do you do?
Well, you know what I love, and I did hockey for a long time before baseball. What I love about baseball is the storytelling is just woven into the sport. You know, there's no other sport like it. When you talk about a football game, a lot of what you talk about is the matchup, because they're playing somebody different. They're playing Miami Monday, and so you look at the matchups. With baseball, you played them last night. You know, it's really more about what this guy is doing right now, what he's done in the last 2 weeks. 2 weeks is an eternity in baseball. Whereas in hockey, you know, you look at 30, 40 games and start to talk about a trend. We talk about trends in days. You know, I laugh. We get to September and someone will say, hey, season's almost over. It's like, yeah, we got 30 games left. That's half an NBA season. You know, there's just nothing like it. And so what I love about baseball is you wake up every morning and you're feeding off what I did, you know, sometimes at 1 a.m. on the post-game show the night before. But it's all about the pitching matchup. It's the thread of what happened last night. The prep start, we have a 10 a.m. conference call every morning with the producers. That kind of starts the day. And then you talk to the manager at 4 p.m. It's just, it never ends. But it's the beauty of it. It's just in your blood.
You've had a rotating schedule of guest hosts that have joined you on the post game in particular. Don't want you to name names, but some have been better than others. Did you ever have that moment like, oh man, this ain't working?
Yes, sure. And you have those unexpected moments where, wow, I didn't think this was going to work, and this is really comfortable. Like this. No, just kidding. This is really comfortable. So thank you for that.
I appreciate the white lie.
There are times where, you know, and again, not naming names, but there are times where an analyst will give you a four-word answer, and, you know, to the first question of the postgame show.
Oh, great.
And the back of your mind's like, all right, we got 57 more minutes. Let's try to get through this together. You know, by and large, most of the guys are pretty good. And I think what I do well with the show is try to mine the depths of their knowledge and pull what's best out of them. Some guys, I got to talk a little about their era to get them back on the mound or at the plate, to get them thinking about the game. Other guys stay really up to date on what's going on now, so I don't have to go there. What I have learned over 20 something years of doing this, hitters know hitting and pitchers know pitching. And don't ask a pitcher about a hitter unless you ask him about the approach of the pitcher to that hitter, right? It's a simple thing, but you talk about David Ortiz, and I know the pitcher's thinking about, well, yeah, he left it out over the plate. That's why it was a home run. And so you really sort of direct him to David Ortiz's ability to hit good pitching, and now you've got him back. So they look at completely different games. Some of the best nights when I have two guys with me, one's a hitter, one's a pitcher, we can go everywhere. And that makes it a little easier.
All right, stick around, TC. I want to find out what it's like to grow up a Red Sox fan and then to grow up and find that you're covering them. Stay with us. Welcome back. If you like Season Ticket, be sure to subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts. Subscribing, it's the best way to make sure you get the latest podcast as soon as it's available. One of the delights about baseball for me, and certainly for most fans, is that it's a different story every night, and you find some play that has happened that you get to scratch your head for a moment. You go, wait a minute, what's the ruling on that? Have you had some of those moments in the past year or two that popped to mind that you go, wow, that was something?
The first thing I thought of when you said that was 2 years ago, I think now. Somebody hit the Green Monster on the right side. There's a vertical yellow line going up. And Dave O'Brien and Jerry Remy are the broadcast. I'm back in studio, and nobody really knew what the rule was.
To the right of it, the ground rule isn't that a home run?
To the right of it is a home run.
Yes.
To the left of it's off the wall. This hit the line.
Oh.
And traditionally, if you hit the yellow lines, are traditionally the foul poles.
Our home runs.
Which we all know are the fair poles, right?
Right.
It's a home run. And so, I don't want to name names. One of the broadcasters thought it was a home run. One of them was pretty adamant it wasn't. I'm back in studio, and that's when this is fun, right? I'm furiously scrambling through ground rules, and I find it. So they actually get a mic, and they bring me into the broadcast. And now the game's going on, and I'm sparring with OB and Rem about, well, no, I think you interpret it this way. And it was a double. It was not. It wasn't even a ground rule double. It was just in play, right? It was whatever you can get out of it, because the outfielder played it off the wall. And that yellow line, even though every other yellow line, I think, in baseball is a foul pole, that horizontal yellow line on the right side is to do the opposite, exactly what you said. If it's to the right of it, it's a home run. If it's on the line or to the left of it, it's off the wall.
Okay, I didn't know that.
See?
I would have said home run, it hit the pole.
Everybody thought that at the time, except for me. I'm proud to say I had it right.
You got it right.
You know, and one thing I, with the advent of instant replay, I kind of have a mole in the major league replay room, and I call him whenever there's a wild play. And
you have a mole.
It's great. And I've got this contact, and he will take my call and tell me what happened in the green. And so if you watch our broadcast, I jump in inevitably shortly after a controversial play and say, well, listen, here's what they thought, here's what they saw, here's what they called. Which then leads to a half inning of everyone screaming how they're wrong. But those are fun moments, because so much of baseball is interpretation, right? More than any other sport, it's interpretation.
It's interpretation built on over 100 years of rules.
That's the thing. You know, it's not like the NHL, which, again, I did a lot of hockey. And the NHL's been around a long time. But they tend to change rules. Let's take out the red line. Let's put in the red line. Let's have 4-4 in the overtime. Let's have a shootout. You know, baseball is very resistant to change. And we're going to see a little bit coming up.
Yeah.
I think we're going to see a pitch clock. I think we're going to see a limit to meetings on the mound, because they want to move the game along a little bit. And I think we all agree that it should be. But you're right. There's about 120 years of inertia behind every one of those interpretations.
I remember reading the great late umpire Ron Luciano's books, The Umpire Strikes Back and all of that. And one of the things that he wrote is that he kept the rule book, but he also annotated it on a given play. This happened. We did that. In the next rule book, we got to update or clarify.
It's organic. It's organic.
A great term for it. What is something that you wish people knew about your job? Because I think everybody watches it and goes, I could do that.
They probably could.
No, they
don't. And I don't want them to know that. So let's not use that. It's what you think the downside of a job like this would be, right? You work nights, you work weekends, you miss birthdays, you miss 4th of July, you miss holidays. I mean, that's, you know, it's great. I'm watching baseball for a living. It's what I would be doing if I wasn't. If I had a job in construction, I'd go home and watch baseball at the end of the day. I'm getting paid to watch the baseball, so that's great. But the hours are long, you know. And this past year, we had more extra inning games. I think the Red Sox played 50-something innings more than any other team in baseball last year. And we had, I think it was a 16-inning game in Seattle. So that was a 10 o'clock start. Got on the air around 3. They still made us do the postgame show.
I watched.
Thank you. I should have said hello to you, because you were probably the only one watching. I got home and the sun was rising, you know. And we had a day game, I believe, the next day, like a 4 o'clock game. You had to, you know. So that's the downside of it. But listen, I teach my kids, right? If you find a passion that you can make your living, you've done pretty well, right? Is it Confucius who said, find a job you love and you'll never work a day in your life? I've never worked a day in my life.
A lot of stuff is attributed to Confucius.
Yeah, it probably was. Probably Harry Truman or something.
We're probably safe on that. You're here tonight as a host of the Globies.
Yes.
And we certainly appreciate your doing that. What attracts you to this crowd here?
Well, I love, I'm old school. I majored in journalism. The Peter Gammons baseball notes of the 80s and 90s were right. The Bible. You know, I grew up in Maine, and so we didn't always get all the games on TV, but you could get the Globe on the Sunday and read all about what was happening in Boston. So I've always felt an affinity with the Globe. I've gotten to know most of the writers and Joe Sullivan, the sports editor, and I have an amazing amount of respect for print journalism. And, you know, it's become a lost art to have a great newspaper in your city. And I think we have a great newspaper in our city. So anything I can do with the Globe as a brand is an honor to me. And I love the idea of just getting everybody together from all the different teams to celebrate. You know, I was with Dave Dombrowski a minute ago, and then I turned around and bumped into Scott Zolak, and I was talking to Keith Folk about the 2004 World Series. It's a pretty good group here.
What's it like to bump into Scott Zolak?
He's big. He looked down at me and told me my Dr. Leonard hair looks great, so I don't know if that was a dig or if that was a real compliment. Scott, you know, he's what you hear on the radio is what you get when you see Scott Zolak in person.
I want to ask you one final question, and you grew up in Maine. I grew up here outside Boston, and we grow up, and the Sox, of course, you know, we're fans. But when you're covering them, you can't root in the press box. Was there a moment where you felt, go Sox?
Oh, I mean, you know, I got my first year in studio was 04. You know, you do the whole playoff run in the World Series. And the quick story is my first job out of college was 86. I was at a station in upstate New York. I was on the air right after the Buckner play because that was a Saturday night and I was the weekend anchor. And three times during that game, you know, the old rotary phone, I called home to Maine before running out because I had to run right out on the set when the game was over and they came to us. But I wanted to, right as it ended, as they were celebrating, I was going to call my parents. Three times. They were one strike away. Three times I hung up.
I remember.
Never made that call. Fast forward to 04 and we're going out in a studio, and I've told Keith this before. You know, now I got a flip phone, right? Now it's 2004, and even that's old, right? Even that's antiquated. But I got a flip phone.
Those didn't have rotaries on.
No, they didn't have rotaries. They had push buttons. Yeah, yeah. So right as the ball comes to Folk, I hit send, and I called my mom and dad were still alive, and I called them up in Maine. My whole family was there. We all celebrated. Although, parenthetically, this is my neurotic Red Sox fan moment. I hit send before Folk threw it to Minkiewicz. And the thought crossed my mind. Oh, my God, he's going to throw it away. They're going to lose 4-3. I blew this. Luckily, he didn't. So I hit send. I celebrated my parents. I hung up. My phone buzzed, and it was my wife calling with our son. And so my son was 8. I was in my 40s. My dad was in his 80s. And it was the first World Series championship of all three of our lifetimes. And that's why there were church bells ringing and why we put Red Sox hats on gravestones. So, I was a fan in 04. It was hard not to be.
Yeah, of course it was. Tom Caron, studio analyst for NESN. You guys know him all summer long from Red Sox game. Thank you so much for joining us on Season Ticket.
Thank you, Steve. This was fun.
And that's it for this edition of Season Ticket. And if you've enjoyed the show, please tell a friend and leave us a review. I'm Steve Safran in for Chris Casper. We'll see you tomorrow.